Morning. It's good to be with you today. Those of you that are visiting, we're glad that you're here. And just so you know, I've got this sling on because I had rotator cuff surgery this past Tuesday and recuperating from that. Everything seemed to go fine and be some months of physical therapy ahead of me, but I think everything is good. Ethan thought I should put a disclaimer on the lesson this morning that I've been on pain medicine just in case. You know, I don't know what he thinks I'm going to say, but I think I told him this morning it was time to go to school when I woke him up. So at least that'll be a reason for you to stay awake because you just don't know what I might say. Do want to look this morning at the book of Jonah. And the lesson this morning is comparing Jonah with the character of the elder brother in the parable of the prodigal son. Sometimes we call Jonah the first elder son because of his attitudes that he had. And when Jesus told the parable of the man with two sons in Luke chapter 15, you might wonder if there was meant to be a comparison here. Because if you recall, in the parable of the prodigal son, when the young man left home, he had asked his father to split inheritance so that he could go away. And there were two sons. There was one son that stayed at home. And when the younger brother saw the error of his ways and prepared himself to come back home, and the father welcomed him back and threw a feast for him, the elder brother stayed outside and would not go in and rejoice to celebrate the fact that his younger brother had come back home. And of course, the elder brother makes the statement to his father that I've never transgressed your commandment at any time. I've done what I'm supposed to do. I've been here all the time, and your son has gone and wasted his money with riotous living, and you've never done these things for me. So Jonah is also a person that seems to have this kind of attitude that the elder brother had. Jonah is also mentioned, other than just in the book of Jonah, he's also mentioned in 2 Kings chapter 14, starting in verse 23 through 25. Jonah is a prophet that is mentioned in other places. We don't know a whole lot about Jonah except what is written here. It's a unique book of prophecy because most of the books of prophecy record words the prophet spoke, yet it takes very little time in the book of Jonah to record Jonah's message. Most of the message is about him instead of it being about a message that he brought. But 2 Kings chapter 14, we see him mentioned. Verse 23, in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria and reigned 41 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin. He restored the territory of Israel from the entrance of Hamath to the sea of Arabah, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he had spoken through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. So Jonah is mentioned here as a prophet. He is also mentioned in Matthew chapter 12 as Jesus uses Jonah as a sign, or says that Jonah will be a sign to the adulterous generation that he speaks to. Matthew chapter 12, verse 39, says, he answered and said to them, an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, but no sign will be given to it except of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Then the men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. Indeed, a greater than Jonah is here. So here, Jesus references the fact that the people of Nineveh did listen to the message of Jonah, which we'll see in a few minutes, and that Jesus would be three days in the earth, as Jonah was 3 days within the belly of the great fish. We read these passages just to show that this is not a book of allegory. This is not a story, you know, when we're talking about the book of Jonah. And some people kind of talk about it in that way. When they talk about Jonah and the whale or Jonah and the great fish, This is just a story that it's fiction. But Jesus refers to Jonah as being real. He refers to Jonah as being evidence that he is giving to the audience that he is speaking to. So we need to look at this as something that really happened. And it's not just a parable, but it is something that has real lessons for us. The real lesson that we do see in the book of Jonah, as we've already read for us in the first chapter this morning, is that God is tender-hearted toward those who need Him, that God is kind. And when we look at the book of Jonah, there's a contrast that is made. There's a contrast between the attitude of God toward the people of Nineveh and the attitude of Jonah toward the people of Nineveh. Again, looking at our contrast between Jonah and the elder brother, not much of a contrast. Both, when you look at their lives, would be considered to be upright and faithful, at least in their own eyes. But their hearts were very cold. And they lacked compassion and lacked sympathy for those that were wicked. And when you look at the parable of the prodigal son and you read the entire book of Jonah, you really are more sympathetic with the one that is wicked in these accounts rather than these who held themselves up as being righteous. And of course, Jesus was making a point to those that considered themselves to be righteous when he told the different parables about the things that were lost, the lost coin, the lost sheep, and the lost son, all had to do with the compassion and the joy that one would have towards something that was lost and was found. So the first thing that we want to see here in the book of Jonah as we go through this short little book this morning is that Jonah made a decision to run away from God. He has a heart of rebellion. He had been told what it is that he needed to do, that he needed to go to preach to Nineveh, that great city. And it was a city that was great in number and certainly would be great in possibility when these people did not have a covenant relationship with God as the Israelites did. They were wicked. So there is a great opportunity here, a great possibility for them. And God is showing His kindness to all men in pursuing them. And He's showing His kindness to the Ninevites by pursuing Jonah and telling Jonah to go and preach to these people. And Jonah is one who is brought to his senses in this storm. So we have Nineveh, which is a great city. We have the prophet that is mentioned here in verse 3. Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid a fare and went down into it. When you look at a map and see, you know, where Jonah was, you see here on the right hand, my right hand side, you see Joppa. Point A is where Jonah was. It was point B that he needed to go to, and so he didn't go to point A. He went to point C, which is here on the other side. So you see, he's really making an effort to get as far away as possible from where it is that God told him to go. He went in exactly the opposite direction. Nineveh was roughly 550 miles northeast of Samaria. Tarshish was 2,000 miles west. So, you know, did Jonah agonize over his decision? Perhaps. It seems that he made that decision pretty quickly. But the thing that is amazing to me when we look at the account is that when Jonah made this decision, what's the first thing he does? He gets on a boat and he goes to sleep. You know, how do you go to sleep after making that kind of decision? You know, sometimes people are that way. We can agonize over a decision, and then after it's made, you know, that's it. I'm not going to think about it anymore. I've done what I'm going to do. And if he had agonized over it, he's not agonizing over it anymore. He's found contentment, at least to the point that he is able to go to sleep. But his voyage is not going to be very smooth when he's made the choice to run away from God. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 15 tells us the way of the transgressor is hard, or the way of the unfaithful is hard. Many times when I read this, I think about Jonah thinking that he can run away from God. And it reminds me of trying to run away from my dad sometimes. Especially on car trips. We always seem to get spankings on car trips. And we had long voyages to go on across the states. You know, my grandparents lived in Richmond, Virginia, and we'd travel. My dad would get us up early in the morning. We'd all stretch out in the back of the station wagon. And we had one of those long station wagons where you had the back seat, and then you had the very back, is what we called it. And the very back is what we would get into to get away from my dad. You know, if we were doing something, he was trying to backhand us, you know, well, we're running to the very back. But it doesn't really work, because he can stop the car and he can pull us out of the very back, which he did many times. Running away from dad was not something that ever worked for very long. And Jonah is in the same situation. He is running away from God. He found a little bit of contentment and can go to sleep. But God is going to get Jonah back to where God wants Jonah to be. Running away is not going to work. Interesting also that in verse 6 of chapter 1, we see that he is awakened and he is in the same boat with the pagans. He's in the same boat with those that are not servants of God, yet they're all in danger now, aren't they? Verse 6 says, "So the captain came to him and said to him, 'What do you mean, sleeper? Arise, call on your God, and perhaps your God will consider us that we may not perish.'" So he doesn't say, "Call on our God." He's telling Jonah, "I know who you are. You call on your God, and maybe you can help us." So here, spiritually, Jonah is in the same boat as those that really don't have a God. He's forced to reflect on his God. And sometimes that helps us to remember who we are and remember whose that we are. And Jonah is the cause of some problems for these people. And Jonah took responsibility, and you can give Jonah credit for that. He knew that the storm that they were in the middle of was because of him, and he told the men to throw him over, and of course that helped those that were on the boat. It didn't help Jonah so much. But the point is that Jonah had to realize his responsibility. The elder brother in the parable of the prodigal son needed to realize his responsibility too, but we don't see that he did. But when the prodigal son realizes his responsibility, he makes the effort to go back to his father and say, "I need to come back to you and be your servant." Well, let's look at what we see in the book of Jonah as Jonah realizes his responsibility. What does he do? Well, it says that he composes a psalm, and it seems that he composes a psalm from various psalms that he would have known about. Chapter 2, it says, "Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the fish's belly, and he said, 'I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas. All the floods surrounded me, and your billows and your waves passed over me. Then I said, I have been cast out of your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The waters surrounded me, even to my soul. The deep closed around me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. I went to the moorings of the mountains. The earth with its bars closed behind me forever. Yet you have brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy, but I will sacrifice to you. With the voice of thanksgiving, I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord.' So the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto the dry land." So here, Jonah composes a psalm, and it doesn't seem like he has a lot of originality in what he composes, because all these thoughts are not original at all. They're all recorded in the Psalms, except for verse 5 where he says, "Weeds are wrapped around my head." That's something that seems to be original with him. But obviously he was familiar with the Psalms, and he remembered some things that were written and applied those to himself and is remembering the kindness of God, and God is kind to him and lets the fish vomit him onto the dry land. And it reminds me of the prodigal son when he remembers the blessings of home. The son goes away from home and doesn't really appreciate what he has at his father's house until he gets away from it. And no doubt here Jonah appreciates the kindness of God a little bit more and realizes his place before God as he is in the belly of the fish and composes this song. And so Jonah is not one that is lazy. He's one that goes and preaches, and he should be doing that. The elder brother in the parable of the prodigal son is not one that was lazy either. It says he was in the field working. And neither Jonah nor the elder brother had been guilty of the things that their counterparts were guilty of. You know, Nineveh was a very wicked city. And Jonah was not in that category of perpetuating the kind of wickedness that the Ninevites, the Syrians, were famous for doing. The elder brother stayed home and did not waste his father's money on riotous living. So, you know, they had some good points, but when we think about Jonah and the elder brother, what we remember is their attitude. And we'll see more about this as we read on in the book of Jonah. Both Jonah and the elder brother had sinful dispositions because Jonah was angry, and he was envious of the mercy that would be shown to Nineveh. Jonah wanted Nineveh destroyed. That's why he did not want to go and preach to them. The elder son wanted his brother to stay in the pig pen and didn't want his brother received by the father. And you think about that, you know, what did each one of them lose by God showing kindness to the other? What did Jonah miss out on by God being merciful to the Ninevites? It didn't hurt Jonah in any way. It didn't hurt the elder brother that the younger brother was accepted and brought back into the fold. It's just envy, and sometimes people are envious of anything that they see that is good that happens to somebody else. We view what is good for somebody else as hurtful to us, which is a very sad state to be in. Let's read on in the book of Jonah, Jonah chapter 3. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you." So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent. And Jonah began to enter the city on his first day's walk. Then he cried out and said, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown." So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth, from the greatest to the least of them. Then the word came to the king of Nineveh. And he arose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth and sat in ashes, and he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, "Neither let man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything, nor let them eat or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hand. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish?" Then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. So we see that they had a change of heart, that they are doing things that would be consistent with being repentant. They fasted, they put on sackcloth and ashes, and showed that they were distraught with what the prophet had said. Jonah had been successful in the short message that he had brought to Nineveh. The people had responded, and God relented from what he said would have happened to them if they had not repented. So, you know, if the story ended here, you know, this would paint a pretty good picture. But this is not the way that the book of Jonah ends. Here in chapter 3, we see that Jonah went on a mission as a slave, not as a son. You know, this is likened to a child doing something that he knows he has to do because his parents are making him do it. You know, sometimes children will will do something because they know that their parents expect it. You know, when I was growing up, we always needed to tell people when we went out to their house, tell them that we enjoyed it. We needed to be thankful for my mom, preparing meals for us. And one day my brother Byron was asked to say the prayer before we ate, and my mom had been very experimental in the kitchen, especially with my brother's diet. He was hyperactive, and so she was always trying some new things that weren't necessarily too good. But Byron says the prayer, and when he finishes, my dad says, "Byron, you forgot to say thanks for the food." He says, "No, I didn't." And because he was not thankful for what it was that we were about to receive. Well, I won't go to the rest of the story there, but Byron should have been a little more thankful. We always were told to tell people when we went over to their house that we enjoyed it, that we appreciated what it was that they did for us. And one of our children, when we started the same practice, we were over at Roz's house, and one of our boys that shall remain nameless, went to Roz and said, "I enjoyed it." They always make me say that. The point here is that sometimes people can do the right things for the wrong reason, and people will do things because they're made to do it. And Jonah was doing something here because he was made to do it. He was being made to go to Nineveh. That became very apparent to him that that's where he was going, and that God wanted him to go there. He was not going to run away this time. He didn't want what happened before to happen again or something worse. So Jonah is upset about the situation. Chapter 4 says, "This pleased Jonah exceedingly, and he became angry. So he prayed to the Lord and said, 'Ah, Lord, was this not what I said when I was still in my country? Therefore, I fled previously to Tarshish, for I know that you are a gracious and merciful God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, one who relents from doing harm. Therefore, now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live.'" And so you see how upset Jonah is about the situation. He is angry because of God's mercy. And it's very parallel to what we see in the elder brother. The elder brother is angry because the prodigal son is allowed to come back home and feast with his family and friends. And the elder brother won't have any part of that rejoicing. So here in the account of Jonah, we see God asked Jonah a question. The Lord said, "Is it right for you to be angry?" And Jonah went out of the city and sat on the east side of the city. There he made himself a shelter and sat under in the shade that he might see what would become of the city. And the Lord God prepared a plant and made it come up over Jonah that he might be shaved, that it might be shaved for his head to deliver him from his misery. So Jonah was very grateful for the plant. But as morning dawned the next day, God prepared a worm, and it happened when the sun rose that God prepared a vehement east wind, and the sun beat on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. Then he wished death for himself and said, "It is better for me to die than to live." Then God said to Jonah, "Is it right for you to be angry about the plant?" And he said, "It is right for me to be angry even unto death." But the Lord said, "You have had pity on the plant for which you have not labored, nor made it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And should I not pity Nineveh, that great city in which are more than 120,000 persons who cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and much livestock?" And that is the sad way that the book of Jonah ends. Jonah is angry because of God's mercy. As Jonah goes outside of the city, what's he doing? Well, he wants the city to be destroyed, and he goes outside the city so he can watch destruction come upon it, and it doesn't happen. And he's angry because of the mercy of God, and he has some affection for this plant that springs up and gives him shade, and then he's upset about that. And so, maybe I shouldn't say this, but here we have the environmentalist Jonah, who is more concerned about the plant than he is for people. And and Jonah is so angry that he wished that he could die rather than live. That's a pretty sad state to be in, and to have that kind of attitude toward those who really needed the mercy of God. Rather than rejoice that the message had been heard and responded to, he's angry and wants to die. the elder brother, rather than going in and feasting with his father and the family and sharing the rejoicing with his brother, he won't go in to him. He's angry about that. And we notice here that God sent out the great wind. He sent the fish to swallow Jonah. He sent the plant. He sent the worm. You know, everything in the book of Jonah obeys God except Jonah. Did you notice that? Everything that God sends is obedient to Jonah. And it took, you know, two efforts, two times to get Jonah to go to Nineveh. And really the book ends without you getting any indication that Jonah ever had any compassion for Nineveh. So did Jonah change his mind? Did the elder brother in the parable ever change his mind? You know, we're not told. We just are left seeing their attitudes as they both sat outside with the bottom lip poking out. What we need to understand when we read the book of Jonah is, and when we read the parable of the prodigal son, is that there is a Nineveh today. There are prodigal sons. There are people that are lost. And there is a message of deliverance that needs to be delivered to people. And it needs to be delivered by us. Paul said in Romans chapter 1 that he was not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. So Paul wanted that message to go out because it would affect people. If Paul had preached the message to the people of Nineveh, you know, what would have his reaction been? You know, I would imagine that Paul's reaction would have been a great joy, because the power of God's salvation, the gospel, had been brought to people, then that they understood it and they obeyed it and they repented. And that's usually the result that a prophet would want. A spokesman of God would want that kind of result. They would want the message of deliverance to be responded to. One lesson that we can certainly learn from the book of Jonah is that we do not need to judge the heart of those who need to hear the message. Jonah had already judged the people of Nineveh as being unworthy of hearing the word before he ever got there. That's why he ran away from the job. We should not judge anybody unworthy of hearing the message, but we should share it. We should share the message, and then the people that hear it can decide whether or not they're going to obey it. When we look at the book of Jonah and see that he was upset about this plant, you can ask yourself the question, what upsets us the most? Lost things or lost people? I read a story, and I don't really have any idea if it's absolutely true or not. But the story goes this way, that a congregation built a new building, and somebody donated 2 5-foot plants to adorn the front of the building. And months later, the plants went missing. And the elders deputized some members to try to find them. Announcements were made, you know, from the pulpit. There were announcements about it in the bulletin for about 2 months. You know, everybody was reminded that our plants have been stolen. Then the preacher made an announcement. He said, for 2 months, at almost every service, announcements have been made and people have earnestly looked for that which is lost. For years we have known that sheep have strayed from the flock. Prodigal sons are away from the worship, and the Bible declares that they are lost. If we had put forth 1/10 of the energy in locating the lost souls that we have in trying to locate the lost plants, surely angels in heaven would rejoice. Again, I don't have any idea if that's a true story, but I think it really hits the heart of what we see in the book of Jonah. That Jonah had more concern over this plant, and that's the very lesson that God gives Jonah. You care more about this plant than you do in these 120,000 lost souls who really needed to hear the gospel. What concerns you the most? You know, your own comfort or the eternal destiny of those who need to hear the gospel? The message of the book of Jonah is really not Jonah. I know we need to look and see what Jonah did, and we need to avoid having the same attitude, but really the message of the book of Jonah is the grace of God and the mercy of God that he had upon these people who needed to hear the word, and they understand it and they obeyed it. So the book begins and ends with God speaking. It has a powerful message. Unfortunately, Jonah was kind of on the outside looking in when it came to that message, and he was not really personally involved with the heart of that message, but God wanted him to be. God wanted him to have a heart for the lost. And that is the message that we see in both of these accounts that we talked about this morning. The book of Jonah and the parable of the prodigal son have the same lesson for us. Jesus was trying to get the same lesson across to the unrepentant Pharisees who didn't have any heart for the lost, and get them to realize that there is great joy to be had when something that is lost is found, especially when it comes to the hearts and souls of mankind. I hope this lesson will be beneficial to you and help you to be encouraged to spread the message to others so that others can have the opportunity of a home in heaven. We can help you in any way to be obedient to the gospel, and we can do that this morning. We'd invite you to come while we stand.